Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I don't know if you've heard, but Mint's premium wireless is $15 a month. But I'd like to offer one other perk. We have no stores. That means no small talk.
Crazy weather we're having.
No, it's not. It's just weather. It is an introvert's dream. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Let's talk. Talk.
Dark justice inside the world of paedophile hunters. It's difficult to imagine a more heinous crime than the sexual abuse of children. Yet, terrifyingly, a new case of child sexual abuse is reported every 7 minutes. In response to this crisis, self-appointed groups of citizens are fashioning themselves as paedophile hunters. This is the subject of a new book called Dark Justice. It is by Mark Durand. I'm delighted to say that Mark joins us live on the line now. Mark, good morning to you.
Hey, good morning, Giles.
It's a horrendous subject, Mark. How are you qualified to write about this subject? What is your speciality so that we have some background?
Yeah, no, sure. I work as an anthropologist, effectively. So I study subcultures by living with people in a subculture for long periods of time. And I've done this with doctors and nurses in Afghanistan, with boat race rowers, with peace activists, adventures on the Amazon, and now for the past 4 years with paedophile hunters. I'm not sure if that qualifies me, but at least suggests I have an interest in communities like this.
And we talk about a community. Is this a community, Mark? Or is it because we tend to think people are taking, this is basically vigilantes. Do they see themselves as vigilantes? Do they see that government structures are failing them? And do they think that they are the people who can do this?
Yeah, so they certainly feel like they're the last line of defense, that government is failing, either because government is corrupt or because they don't care, or because they're not competent. And so they feel like they have to sort of step in and do this. But the term vigilantes itself is one that they wouldn't use. I mean, they use it internally to, if anything, condemn the efforts of other hunting groups that don't do things by the book, so to speak. But they wouldn't use the term themselves. They think of themselves as activists first and foremost. And certainly the team I spent 4 years living with see themselves as being very professional compared to many other teams.
When you say you were living with them, did they know that you were an anthropologist doing research into groups? Because presumably, if they did, they wouldn't be very happy with you monitoring them, because of by their very nature, Mark.
Yeah. No, they did. They did from day one, and even knew that I was working alongside police for those 4 years. And so, gosh, I mean, when I tried to do this work, I thought it'd be no problem at all to get embedded with a paedophile hunting team, seeing how they were quite lively on social media, but it was quite hard, in fact. And so it took a while, but when I got in, they were very generous and took me on board and taught me how to be a hunter myself and kind of let me watch them. And in the end, when I wrote the book, I gave the book to them to read, and I know for a fact it was a very difficult read for them, particularly learning of the impact of what they do on the families of predators. But also I gave them the opportunity to write their own little bit for the book. And I said, you know, just tell the audience what I got wrong and maybe what I got right and what you want the world to know about you. And I said, I'll publish those as part of the book and I won't edit them for you. I'll just publish them as they are, which is what I did. And so at the end of the book, you have their own essays, you know, where they tell the world partly why they do what they do. Yeah, also reflect a little bit on the book itself.
When it comes to doing this, we have unfortunately had child murders. We have seen, you know, paedophile rings, etc. Was there any particular series of events that has led to? Because these groups have been around for a while now, sort of since Ian Huntley murdering the girls in Soham, etc. So we're looking at 20, 25, maybe 30 years since the Bolger murder, of course. So, I mean, I know that's not paedophiles, but that's murder. But with people, is this now a system, a network of hunters that is established, that is, you know, almost recognized? And you kind of find it strange because this is a group operating outside the law when the police can't get them? I mean, I know that's a very long-winded question, Mark, but you see what I'm getting at here. So, you know, has there been a sort of set of circumstances, you know, a list of these that convinced people something had to be done?
Yeah, wow, it's a great question. I mean, in America, for a while, there was a television series called To Catch a Predator, and that effectively created the template for paedophile hunting today in the UK. It became more popular in the UK following sort of the BAFTA-winning, award-winning Channel 4 series on paedophile hunting. And at some point, about 2 years ago, we had about 192 different teams hunting in the UK. And that number now sits at about 150. And so it's a very popular thing to do. Not many teams do it for very long. And so you have the team I was with, Cobra, who've done it now for about four and a half years. They're still the most prolific, or one of the most prolific teams in the UK by arrest data. And when you talk to the hunters themselves and you ask them why they do what they do, it becomes clear very quickly that they do it for all sorts of reasons. So other than finding themselves sort of defending society, they also think they are fighting a moral scourge, you know. And they often do what they do partly because they themselves were abused as kids, or because, you know, as kids they saw abuse in their own family and were too little to do something about it. And so this is their chance to confront the very people who made their own or other people's lives misery. And they actually are very effective. And the relationship with police is an interesting one, because police can't be seen to endorse what these hunters do, but it's not legal, so they can't stop them. And the reason they can't be seen to endorse it is because, you know, these hunters, you know, at the end of the day, they question on camera suspected predators without giving them legal advice or without giving them a benefit of doubt. And ultimately, the impact on the families of these predators, who often had no idea what the father or the son or the spouse was up to, they're very badly affected by the result, because at the end of the day, the exposure is very humiliating, and it's watched live by maybe 3,000-4,000 people on Facebook. But at the end, you know, if it's a good sting, they call them stings, then it may be watched by 250,000 people within 48 hours.
So what we're talking about here isn't justice being dealt out. They're not going to grab somebody, beat them up, or march them to a police station. It's because, I mean, when you say paedophile hunters to me, I remember the images of 20 years ago with literally mobs outside and you know, breaking windows and the whole thing. This is perhaps more sophisticated because of social media and the internet and the rise of iPhones or whatever, so you can record and stream. So just give me a little bit about how they operate, Mark. I mean, how the physical aspects of it works.
Yeah, no, thank you, Giles. So, I mean, what they do is they create a profile online. And they will sit online for as long as it takes for a man to approach them and start talking sexually to them. I think what's depressing is that it's actually very, very quick. And this hunter showed me how quick this is. I mean, literally within minutes, having created a profile online of little boy or little girl, you know, someone will start talking to you and sending you pics and so on. When the talk becomes sexual, what they do is they will remind the predator three times that they're underage. And beyond those three times, if the sexual talk continues, it's fair game. And so what they do, they either wait for the predator to suggest to meet, to say, well, how about you and I meet at a cinema at 5 o'clock on a Sunday? We'll go see a film, get some popcorn, and I'll drop you up. I'll drop you off back home, you know, when the film is done. Or if there's no suggestion of a meet, what they'll do is they'll find out where you live or where you work. And what they then do, I mean, in either case, it's not a child showing up, but they'll show up and knock on your door. They'll take their smartphones and they will ask you to account for what you said you wanted to do to a child live online. And so anyone can watch this. And what I will have done in preparation is to print out the entire deck of screenshotted chat. And so they'll carry it along, and they'll first of all ask the predator if it's him. It's almost always a he in the photo, because by this time the predator will often have sent a photo along. And then they'll effectively, without reading necessarily the transcripts, they'll effectively just simply ask him to defend, if it's, you know, what he wanted to do. And I mean, it's, when you read what people want to do to kids, it is beyond horrible. I mean, it's just, it's very, very hard to imagine how people can get to a place like that so very quickly. But that's what they do. It became my job to call police. And so after about 10 or so minutes of this, they would not, and I would call the police, and the police will show up in anywhere from 20 minutes to 4 hours, depending on how busy they are. And then police will make the arrest, and they make the arrest in part to protect the predator, right? Because when people walk past, they pretty quickly understand what's going on, and they might want to have a go themselves. And so, you know, you then end up having to protect the predator from people on the outside. And so police come to make the arrest. And either they will prosecute, or they, you know, what they often do is they will send the predator back home, possibly on bail. And then they wait a court date, sort of 11, 12 months, you know, from that moment. And it's partly because the predators know that a court date might be so far in the future that they need these videos to be online, so at least people can be aware of who might be operating in their midst. I mean, that's the argument. So.
The impact on the predators' families, because, you know, we have this idea in our mind about the loner, don't we, and sitting downstairs in a basement with his computer. And yet, probably what you've seen, Mark, is unfortunately these people who prey are all types. It's not just one sort of type of person. And they won't be doing this with the knowledge mainly of their families, of, you know, they may be maybe apparently happily married, stable with children themselves. So, you know, I'm not saying that it is a really difficult subject, isn't it? And it has a real effect on the families who may be completely innocent of this, and yet the tsunami of abuse that will come their way can be absolutely devastating.
Yeah, I couldn't put it better myself. I mean, it's exactly what's happening. You know, families typically have no idea what the father, the son, the spouse, husband was up to. And are as surprised as anyone else is. And unfortunately, you know, whatever the results following the arrest, you know, there's always the smoking gun, you know, even if people are let off with no further action. And families are badly stigmatized in the communities. And, you know, the book contains letters written by families to me and to police just to explain what happened and what the impact has been. And it's, for them, it's horrendous too. You know, they are, you know, they're victims in this as well. Not necessarily the predators. I mean, I won't buy their corner, but I mean, the families of the predators who are innocent in this actually are badly victimized as a result.
You mentioned before that a lot of the people who are, or some of the people who hunt, are victims of child abuse themselves and do not want to see that passed on. There is this circle. You know, you're abused by somebody, you will abuse, etc. I'm just thinking of triggers, because if you have been abused as a child, to then see the same thing, because you will recognize the patterns. Okay, it's online, but you will recognize the conversation and the offers that were made. Let's go to the park. Let's go to a cinema. You know, I've got puppies, whatever. It must be, I'm just thinking, it must be really hard to keep that trauma in check with the people hunting. Because again, we think, okay, the people who are hunting have this, they may have something not quite, it's not the sort of thing that you think that somebody would do. So maybe there is something quote unquote wrong with them. But at the same time, they must go home after they've identified somebody, and it must completely muck with their brains in terms of past experiences, past trauma must come to the surface. They've got to be really, really strong about that, Mark. I mean, how did you talk about that particular thing?
Yeah, no, of course. And I mean, you're right, you know, what effectively they choose to do as part of the work is to expose themselves to being re-traumatized over and again, you know. And sometimes what can be most unsettling is for them, and it's going to sound a little odd, but for them as being survivors of abuse, to worry that the predator might see right through them and might recognize them to have been victims of abuse themselves. And again, you know, I'm not a psychologist, but these are the stories they tell me. And so how do they cope? Well, you know, they tend to keep it in-house. And so they have, you know, often in their team, they have one or two people that have counseling experience. And so they tend to become a kind of a support for each other. That's how they do it. You know, it's not easy. I mean, I wouldn't want to do it longer than I have. It's a very, very difficult thing to have to do. And yeah, it's re-traumatizing. I don't see how it cannot be, you know. So yeah, it's horrible. But they think they're doing really good work, and actually they are very, very effective. You know, in 60% of cases in 2018, when pedophiles were convicted in court, the evidence was partly the evidence of hunters. And so they are brutally effective. What they do is not illegal, but it can cause a lot of harm.
What is the reaction then when they get somebody? Because it's not like a case where they, you know, it's not a case of, I don't know, an animal liberation thing rescues puppies from a laboratory. They rescue the puppies. There's lots of high-fiving and well done. With this, I can imagine, I mean, celebration is the wrong word, isn't it, Mark? I mean, they don't go walk around going, you know, yeah, we got one, presumably, because of the nature. I mean, it must be a very strange kind of celebration or of feeling after they have done this.
Yeah, I mean, it depends a little bit on who the predator is, right? So if the predator is someone who's been talking to a pretend child online, so an adult pretending to be a kid, which is also illegal, I mean, they'll be picked up, they'll be arrested. And I think the reaction is, well, that's another monster off the street. But if you're dealing with a predator who they suspect has been, you know, fiddling with real children, you know, mostly within their own family, I mean, that's what you typically find, then I think the stakes are so high that once someone has been arrested, there's this kind of this dual response. On the one hand, there is the re-traumatizing and sort of where the pain is, it comes to the foreground. But also, there might be even more relief, you know, that a genuine monster has been taken off the ground. So I think the predator makes a big difference, right? So many of the people they pick up have been kind of baited by decoys online. But when you get predators who have abused real kids or are talking to a real kid rather than a decoy, or indeed predators that come to a meet heavily armed, as sometimes is the case, you know, the stakes are very, very high. And and I think in the aftermath, you see both an incredible relief and sense of pride, but also, you know, that all against the background of a lot of shame and anger and pain. Yeah.
How did your viewing of what these, of A, who does, who these, who the hunters are, because we all have stereotypes when we go to something, and then the real experience, how did it change you over the time you were there? So, because obviously this is, if you like, there is a curve to this book. So from when you went in to when you went out and wrote the book, how did your feelings change towards this particular group?
Yeah, no, thanks for asking. I think I entered that world with a very clear sense of right and wrong, you know, sort of, I mean, just clearly the predators and their families, their cohorts, they're in the wrong. And then you have the hunters and law enforcement in the right. And I think where I ended up is a much more complex place that I'm still trying to get my head around, which is, I think on the one hand, you see that there is no such thing as a single predator. They come in all sorts of shapes and sizes. And you're right. I mean, something you said earlier, they look like ordinary people. I mean, that is the... that's the really frightening part about this, right? They're just as ordinary as you and I are. And, you know, becoming more aware, I think, of the impact on the families, and also aware of why hunters do what they do and why they persist with exposing these people, humiliating them in public. I think I ended up in a place that is a lot more sympathetic, I think, to what goes on, but also more confused about the sheer complexity, I think, of trying to handle a problem as big as this, right? I mean, it's a major problem. As you said, every 7 minutes in the UK, police field a case of child sexual abuse. It's something that with the advent of AI will become even worse. And it's a problem the police can't rest themselves out of. And they're very open about this. So they would like people like you and I to help. But the problem is, of course, you know, that generates all sorts of other difficulties in the process, right? So how do you monitor citizens who are keen to help out, but have their own reasons for doing what they do?
What are you hoping that people will learn, Mark, from the book?
Yeah, I mean, so I've thought about this quite a lot. And I think what I would love for people to take away from the book in part is how very human I think the hunters are and police are. So I've spent 4 years with police, 4 years with the hunters at the same time. And I think part of what the book's trying to do is to humanize them and help the public understand that these are not caricatures. You know, these are people with real problems trying to do what I think is a really important job. And then helping people to understand, I think, the human beings on the other side of the equation, you know, the families in particular, not so much the predators. And I think if I could give that world a bit of a human face and help it come to life and give people a better understanding of the moral complexity of this and how these people navigate themselves through that, I think that would be my job done. Yeah.
Well, I think it's a job you've done very, very well indeed. The book is called Dark Justice. You can order it, and I urge you to, listeners, via our own virtual bookstore. Mark, what are you going to work on next? What do you work on next after that one?
I don't know. It's something I'm thinking about right now, but it's I don't know. If you have any ideas, just let me know.
Well, something perhaps in a more sunny environment. Anyway, listen, Mark, congratulations on the difficult work that you've done. The book is called Dark Justice: Inside the World of Pedophile Hunters. It's by Mark Durand. Mark, it's been a hard listen, but thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Charles. Thank you.